This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
There's no such thing as Saturdays anymore. It's just every day is today. And we're not really live, but we are doing everything we can to make this feel like the SNL you know and love. I am even using cue cards, see? I am even using cue cards. Just riff, baby, that's what I'm doing. Well, we have a great show for you tonight. Now, is it going to look a little different than what you're used to? Yes. Will it be weird to see sketches without big sets and costumes? Sure. But will it make you laugh? It's SNL. You know, there'll be some good stuff, maybe one or two stinkers. You know the drill. But let's go. Hey, stay safe. We are in this for the duration, and we will get through this together.
That was the early celebrity face of coronavirus, Tom Hanks, and I think SNL did a decent enough job in giving us programming that we need, original programming that we need. One thing we could do is put a list of movies together. We can go back ourselves or as our families and go back and find things to watch. And it's one thing that our next guest is doing because he is calling this the Tribune Coronavirus Overdue Film Festival, and it's been ongoing in the home of Michael Phillips, the Chicago Tribune film critic, who can be found on Twitter at Phillips Tribune. He's with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you hanging in, Michael?
What's going on, Daniel?
Well, we put a movie list together here too. How did you come up with the overdue film festival list for what you're doing?
Well, I mean, what I love about this is it is just insanely random movie going. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of, we all have a list of films that we, for whatever reason, we never caught up with. We missed it the first time. And then suddenly 20 years goes by, or in my case, more than 20. And I haven't seen, for example, Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner in The Bodyguard. You know, I never saw it. I wasn't reviewing films at that time. I was probably reviewing theater, which is the other half of my life back then. But, I thought it was sort of a delightful experience for my wife and I to see that. But basically hate watching it because we both thought it was bad in very different ways. But it was kind of fun to tick it off the, you know, to knock it off the list. And then I realized there's just all these films that for whatever reason I just had never made the time for or took the time for, good ones, bad ones in between. And when time is permitting in this weird, weird pandemic phase we're living in, and meantime a lot of us at the Trib are writing everything from obituaries relating to the COVID-19 fatalities to all kinds of news pieces, when I have time I'm going to keep that overdue film festival going, because I do think that's how a lot of people are spending their time right now, catching up on stuff they never had the time to see before.
See, we've done it sort of competitively here, Michael, where each one of us in the family, among the four of us, has these similar holes in what other people consider to be canon, where my wife had actively refused to see Three Amigos. Now, the Three Amigos, I know it's not a good movie technically, objectively, but it's immensely important to me. It is one of my sister's favorite movies of all time. And over time, it's become meaningful in ways just beyond the transcend criticism. So my wife said, I won't see it. It's stupid. And so we said, look, so she told me, if I see Three Amigos, you have to watch Footloose, which I've never seen. I'm like, oh, God, is it worth it? So she did see Three Amigos and she said, it's fine. And I said, just let it sit. And over time, you will appreciate Three Amigos better. So we're doing all stuff where we're horse trading movies that other people have to see.
Okay, so you're basically equating Three Amigos with fine wine. If you just let it sit long enough, it'll work.
And no, multiple viewings, yeah.
Absolutely, the nuances. I know, I understand. I'm laughing, especially at the Footloose thing, because that is a key film in the life of my wife, Heidi Stevens, the Tribune columnist. And, I mean, that film changed her life, She rewatches it every, I don't know, hour and a half or so, and I mean, she really, really, that means a lot to her, and I kind of like it too. So did you catch up with Footloose?
Not yet. That's going to be coming up in the list, because the other one that we had is that what I think, and I know that say what you want about everything regarding Woody Allen and art versus artist and the whole thing, but a foundational, essential movie for my very human existence. Is Love and Death, and I've probably seen it literally 200 times, and my daughter had never seen it. My daughter was the only one of the family who hadn't seen it.
Okay. Now I like that pick, because that's actually a lesser known, really good film of his, and although I haven't really by choice gone back and kind of reviewed a lot of the Woody Allen movies that meant something to me earlier. And I'm not sure if it's for, you know, these sort of squishy moral ethical reasons or not. I honestly don't know. I mean, until the last, you know, and frankly, even during the pandemic, these last just few weeks, I haven't had a ton of extra time to just sort of do, you know, to fill, because we have been writing a hell of a lot on various fronts. But I like Love and Death. I think that's a really good straight gag comedy that's got, you know, kind of high, medium, and low humor in it. There's a lot of Russian literature jokes, you know, and there's a lot of cheap sexual entendre, and, you know, and then, of course, this is inevitable with Woody Allen these days. There's a couple of lines about sleeping with blonde 12-year-old girls that makes you absolutely kind of wince, and you cannot listen to those jokes these days without thinking, huh, okay, that's too bad, But, you know, it's all right. I mean, this is some people are revisiting stuff that has always meant something to them during this time. And other people are doing some of that or going back to real favorites like Footloose for my wife or yours, too, apparently. I guess are they in some sort of club together that we don't know about, or what's going on?
that's worth its own essay right there. Like why Footloose means so much to a woman of a certain age or a background. I don't know. That'd be interesting to find out. Like, I'm curious, too, the psychology of film choices. We had Lynn Bramer on from WXRT talking about playlists and talking about music that makes you feel good, or things that you want to hear, where some people are going to music that's actually comfortable, and other people are going to, you know, death metal, or, you know, because that's metal or something, because that's what they have to hear. Yeah. So with movies, what are the macaroni and cheese comfort foods in movies, and then what would be the zagging and going to like really scary stuff to emerge from it and think, well, you know, this is not so bad. It could be awful. We could have zombies eating our faces.
Well, totally. Well, and I mean, that can be really harsh, you know, like as you sort of mentioned, sort of zombie apocalypse stuff, you know, that happens to be really violent, but a lot of it just sort of plays into your fears and your current headspace, but in totally different ways. You know, I mean, the real challenge, I think, for me and for a lot of people is to knowingly take on a movie. Maybe it's a filmmaker you've never encountered before. Maybe it's in another language. Maybe it works at a very deliberate speed that you think first 10 minutes, you think, I can't possibly adjust to the rhythm of this movie right now. You know, it's not, but then you give it another 10 minutes. And then another, and then if if it's working for you, if somehow the spell is cast for you, then you're kind of halfway in this sort of dream state because the film, maybe it's kind of a, you know, maybe it's a more, quote, experimental, unquote, kind of picture. But maybe if you just give it that extra 20 minutes, then you're really in somewhere, you know, in a headspace that's, you know, that you haven't been in before. What I do with music is I do go back to stuff I love and I know I love over and over. Just, and you know, I don't love it the same way I did 10, 20, 30 years ago, but I love it. I don't do that with movies. Isn't that funny? You'd think it'd be the same, but I tend to be more about the new and especially the old stuff I've never seen. And there's, you know, I got hundreds, thousands of, you know, famous or less famous old Hollywood films that I haven't seen, but you know, a good, cheap, grubby 1950s crime picture, that's not hard to watch. It's just kind of fun to discover it for the first time.
We're talking with Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune. He is their film critic, and you're listening to Sports Radio 670, The Score. What is going to happen with whatever is left of the actual movie industry? I don't know if AMC is going to have to declare bankruptcy or what's going to happen, but what's temporary, what's permanent, and when we emerge from this, what will movie going be?
This is a huge question, and it's not been easy to contemplate because, you know, a lot of it, a couple of weeks ago when I talked to some of the folks at AMC and other, you know, the regional chain Classic Cinemas, which is based in Downers Grove, and they run the Tivoli in Downers Grove, among other theaters. So much of it depends on being able to come back, they thought at the time, strong for, may say, like a July restart. And hopefully by then people would feel comfortable, whether it's socially distanced seating or not, whether they're sort of selling one third or one half of the available tickets or not. You know, would that be enough to save them? But then, you know, more, I don't know. I mean, as a citizen, I don't like the idea of reopening too soon. And I think that's the impulse, certainly at the top of the U.S. government, to reopen. And then I just worry that it's going to risk a pandemic second wave like we had 102 years ago with the influenza. But are movie theaters going to survive? That is the question right now. It just is, you know, this, a lot of the big chains are on the brink of insolvency right now. AMC, Cinemark, you know, I don't know if they're going to get through it. But I do think that people are going to, after all these months, however many it's going to be, all these months of movie staying as opposed to movie going, people are going to be eager to, once it's safe, eager to get out in a crowd and experience that. I don't know. I don't see people saying, you know, I've really gotten more accustomed to just seeing everything at home. I'm going to keep doing that. Maybe I'm all wrong on that because I just don't work that way myself. I like going out as often as I can. And I like staying home and watching them too, but I just don't see it. I guess I equate it to e-learning in the college level or something like that. I don't see a lot of 19-year-olds saying, you know what, I'm not going to go to a campus. I'm going to do it at home. I prefer, people do online learning all the time, long before the pandemic, but I just think there's a social aspect that people are going to be pretty hungry for once it's open. What they're going to reopen to, how many multiplexes are going to survive? If I had that answer, I'd be a business writer, not a film critic.
Yeah, and I also look at it, too, from a directorial and artistic perspective. The making of a movie for an individual viewer can be different than making a quote-unquote crowd pleaser. What does it mean to have a crowd pleaser? There was a Twitter meme that was going on with the people showing the actual sound, the gnat sound of a reaction to a theater at the premiere of Avengers Endgame when Captain America wields Thor's hammer, Mjolnir, and the yeah. And hearing that response. That if you're a director, if you're talking about, like, what's your audience? You know, for whom are some of these films and for what presentation are they going to be made?
Yeah, I think I do know that one theory that probably has some truth to it, we'll find out, is that a year from now, when hopefully we're completely open, God knows, and, you know, back in some sort of business, even if it's wobbly and a slow start for everybody, I think you're going to get the event pictures like that, the Marvel movies, especially if it's IMAX related, those are going to take care of themselves. And then a whole lot of stuff is going to that might have played theaters in the old days is probably just going to end up premiering on, you know, Netflix, Hulu, FX, other things. I worry about everything in the middle, you know, and that's a huge chunk of the movie. Every movie budget that's somewhere between $10 million and $50 million, which sounds like a crazy amount of money, but that's a low mid-range budget. I mean, Marvel movies cost $200 million about, you know, to make. I think those are going to take care of themselves because I think people want that. They want the crowd experience. And I think that's also, weird as it sounds, it kind of links back to the Saturday Night Live thing you teased to at the top of the segment there with Tom Hanks hosting, which I thought that intro Hanks gave was great. And it was sort of just right because, I mean, look, he was the first famous celebrity to come down with this stuff. And he made it back. And so he's just a great, you know, he's a great guy to the guy to kind of reintroduce SNL. And then I think, you know, it was a good try, but I hate to be a grump, but it is very tough to do sketch comedy without an audience with performers that are just used to waiting for the laugh. And it's not even skilled ones, really skilled ones like Kate McKinnon, all of them. I don't know. Did it played okay for you? Is that you said?
Yeah, it's okay.
It was okay. Yeah,
it was okay.
It's hard, right? Without real, you know. And then Weekend Update when they rolled in what sounded like 15 people in a canned laughter situation. That was not, you know. That sort of made it seem more strained, not less, to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they needed to do it. I think they needed to figure it out and figure out what works and what didn't. And, you know, if you that was sort of the beta test and doing it experimentally. And I applaud them, at least artistically, for taking those risks, because if the best in the world at what they do, you know.
Yeah, we're all making it up as we go. I mean, absolutely. I mean, the newspaper is trying to figure out how to, you know, deal with all the COVID-19 related coverage and then whatever else makes sense around it, you know, because you can't pretend that nothing has changed, and you can't just write the same old kind of diversionary, you know, escapist thing, because people are not there yet. You know, they are not there yet. I don't know. I just find that, you know, it's you have to question every one of your assumptions about what's going to work and what isn't going to work right now.
Michael, always appreciate the lucidity and original thinking, and look forward to talking to you again when you have the next movies that are coming out on your the Tribune Coronavirus Overdue Film Festival as that rolls on in long form. Look forward to seeing more.
Thank you, and good luck with Footloose, man.
I'll need it. Thank you. That's Michael Phillips, the film critic from the Chicago Tribune.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.